You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Doug Storm. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, April 3rd, 2017. Today is day four of WFHB's Spring Pledge Drive, and we're asking you to call 812-323-1200 now to support independent, volunteer-powered journalism, or visit WFHB.org to make a secure donation online.
Coming up in the next half hour, we speak with a volunteer at Teachers Warehouse on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly, a Democrat, has announced his endorsement of Neil Gorsuch's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. Gorsuch would fill the seat left vacant by the death of Justice Antonin Scalia last year. In a press release, Donnelly called Gorsuch a qualified and well-respected jurist. Both Indiana senators are now in the Gorsuch camp, as newly elected Senator Todd Young announced his support almost immediately. Donnelly's decision follows a statewide ad blitz by political action groups, including the right-wing Judicial Crisis Network. JCN is registered with the IRS as a 501c4, which are commonly referred to as dark money organizations because they are not required to disclose the sources of their funding. This is from an ad that JCN spent $375,000 to run in Indiana.
Senator Donnelly likes us to believe he does what's right. Now he can prove it. Senator Donnelly has a choice. Be another liberal who puts politics over country, or do what's right and support this outstanding judge, Neil Gorsuch. It's your choice, Senator.
Total spending on ads supporting Gorsuch in Indiana has topped $1 million. Senator Donnelly is up for re-election in 2018, which is expected to be a difficult race for a Democrat in a state that voted for Donald Trump by a 20-point margin. Former Senator Evan Bayh, who entered the 2016 Senate race with a significant war chest, lost by 10 points. Republicans currently have 52 votes in the Senate and would need 8 Democratic votes to break any possible filibuster. It is possible that Senate Republicans could pursue a rule change to outlaw the use of the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees, often referred to as the nuclear option. But currently, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell seems unwilling to do so, instead hoping to recruit enough Democrats to confirm Gorsuch. Democrats struggled with a similar dilemma during the Obama administration, but stopped short of doing away with the filibuster for major appointments.
A federal judge has blocked an Indiana law that would have required women to undergo an ultrasound at least 18 hours before an abortion. House Enrolled Act 1337 went into effect last year. It added the 18-hour requirement to the state's existing ultrasound requirement. Previously, it was possible for women to have the ultrasound and the abortion procedure on the same day. The CEO of Planned Parenthood of Indiana and Kentucky, Betty Cockrum, says the requirement flew in the face of evidence-based medical practices.
Yes, there absolutely needs to be an ultrasound, but ideally that's done shortly before the abortion procedure. And for the lawmakers to step into our doctor's offices and suggest that instead the ultrasound needs to be performed at least 18 hours in advance, then sets up a requirement for women seeking an abortion in Indiana to have to make 2 trips to the facility where the ultrasound exists.
Cockrum's organization challenged the law in court, saying it placed an undue burden on the right to an abortion. Federal District Judge Tanya Pratt agreed with that argument and on Friday issued a preliminary injunction blocking the law. In her decision, Judge Pratt says, quote, "The burdens it creates on women, which are significant, even if not overwhelming, dramatically outweigh the benefits, making the burdens undue and the new ultrasound law likely unconstitutional," unquote. Attorneys for the state of Indiana argue that the ultrasound and waiting period do not constitute an undue burden, and that the Supreme Court has previously decided not to overturn mandatory ultrasound laws. But in an interview this afternoon, Cockrum said the requirement would be particularly challenging for the patients served by Planned Parenthood.
It is a fact across the country, and certainly in Indiana, that a disproportionate number of women seeking abortion are low income, and they're oftentimes they're working outside of the home. They're caretakers, in some cases, of other family members. They have children and daycare issues. They may not have reliable transportation. They certainly can't afford overnight lodging. And in some cases, they are victims of domestic violence. And to suggest for absolutely no reason that they have to come in against medical protocol 18 hours in advance when our doctors are still going to wish to do that ultrasound again the next day before the procedure, is it has no purpose. It is simply there to serve as a barrier to access to abortion.
The injunction blocks the state from enforcing the ultrasound requirement until a final ruling is issued in the case. House Enrolled Act 1337 is the subject of multiple other lawsuits brought by Planned Parenthood and allied groups, including the ACLU. The law, one of the most restrictive in the nation, requires burial or cremation of fetal remains and also prohibits abortion sought due to genetic abnormalities or disabilities. The same federal judge also issued injunctions stopping those requirements from being put into effect.
Monroe County has created a fund to facilitate the seizure of property through a controversial process called civil asset forfeiture. On Friday, the county commissioners approved the creation of a new civil forfeiture fund at the request of the county prosecutor's office. There is widespread disagreement about the legality of and justification for civil asset forfeiture, which allows government agencies to seize property they suspect was involved in a crime. In Indiana, there is no requirement that a person be convicted of a crime before the government seizes their property. Agencies can seize cash, vehicles, homes, land, and other property. On Friday, Monroe County Deputy Prosecutor Beth Hamlin said there is a need for the new fund.
The fund or account is necessary so that we can deposit forfeiture funds and then distribute the forfeited funds. The forfeited funds are distributed to law enforcement. We ourselves as the prosecutor's office do not retain any financial interest in that, and it covers the cost of the investigation.
Law enforcement agencies around the country have increased the use of asset forfeiture laws since the beginning of the war on drugs in the 1980s. Proponents argue that the practice discourages criminal activity. Hamlin said the federal government used to handle civil forfeiture on behalf of county prosecutors, but they stopped about a year ago. She said many other counties across the state have created civil forfeiture funds.
It's a best practice across the state. There are a lot of other counties that use such a fund and a contracted situation. It's a best practice to separate the forfeiture from the criminal prosecutions so that we can avoid even an appearance of impropriety as to the prosecution of a case. The plan is a model that's used throughout the state. Our office retains decision-making authority as to what cases will be appropriate to refer for forfeiture actions. The contracted counsel is paid from the proceeds of the forfeiture actions.
Critics of civil forfeiture laws have said they incentivize police to accuse citizens of illegal behavior and to seize their property because the proceeds are traditionally used to help fund police. In Monroe County, the proceeds will be used by law enforcement, though only to pay the cost of an investigation. Hamlin says state law requires the remainder be put in the state's Common Schools Fund.
For us to go after these funds might indicate that we are, you know, just interested in getting the money, and that's why we're prosecuting the case. And so that's why we're trying to contract this out to private counsel And then they are, the private counsel's paid through the forfeited assets, so that we're sort of hands off, we're out of it, and there's no impropriety.
Critics of civil asset forfeiture, including the American Civil Liberties Union, have pointed out the laws disproportionately affect low-income and minority populations around the country. In California, the ACLU reported last year that 85% of seized assets came from communities where a majority of the residents were people of color. Forfeiture cases play out in civil court, where defendants don't have the right to appointed attorneys and the government's burden of proof is lower than in criminal trials. Several Indiana state legislators sponsored legislation this year to reform the state's civil forfeiture procedures. But prosecutors have pushed back, and so far none of the bills have made it through the House and Senate. The county commissioners voted unanimously to approve the creation of Monroe County's new civil asset forfeiture fund.
Today marks the fourth day of WFHB's 2017 Spring Pledge Drive. Now is your chance to support independent local news here in South Central Indiana. The phone lines are open now for you to contribute to Indiana's most award-winning daily news broadcast. Let's go now to News Director Joe Crawford at Pledge Central.
Thank you, Sarah, and thank you, Doug. Indeed, the phone lines are open. We're asking you to call 812-323-1200. Again, that number, 812-323-1200. Sarah, Doug, folks might not think typically about paying for news. Oftentimes, news outlets are funded largely by advertising in some way. And at WFHB, for the most part, that's just not how we run things. Most things are funded primarily by listener contributions, and that's how we have stayed on the air for as long as we have. That's why the Daily Local News has been a part of people's lives here in Bloomington for so long. So we're asking folks to step up as they always have, but as we must request each and every fund drive to pay for this important award-winning work. The phone number again is 812-323-1200, 812-323-1200. We'd love to get your phone calls. You can also, of course, contribute online at wfhb.org. This newscast that you're listening to right now that airs from 5 to 5:30 on your community radio station has won an award for being the best newscast in the state of Indiana for the past 3 years in a row. That's from the Indiana Society of Professional Journalists. And, Sarah, you know, I think that's in no small part because of our dedication to covering local government. We cover literally every city council meeting, every county commissioner meeting, every meeting of the Monroe County Council. And that's actually something that you do besides being an anchor on today's episode of the Daily Local News. You're also doing lots of other stuff at the station, including partnering with Community Access Television Services. And you get the pleasure of going through each and every 6-hour city council meeting and covering that, bringing that information, tracking our local public officials in service of the interests of our listeners. You know, I know that you know that it's no small task. I wonder if others know how difficult that is.
Well, I get the pleasure of watching Kat's videos of county and city government meetings, so no one else has to. And I know that you help me with that sometimes. That makes us, just really, we're as local as it gets. I mean, and it's not just city council meetings, it's the county commissioners, the county council, both the city and the council redevelopment commissions. There's a lot that's going on in the growth of our county and our city, and we're doing our best to keep you, the listener, plugged into all of that's going on. When I think about what's valuable about the DLN, I'm thinking about the conversation that you had with Nancy Richmond of Volunteers in Medicine, and also my conversation with Carrie Conway at Area 10 Agency on Aging when we were looking at the local impacts of potential congressional budget cuts. That kind of community engagement, I think, is just really invaluable and worthy of support.
Indeed, and it does require support. You know, unfortunately, this kind of thing is not free to produce. It might seem like news should just happen. It should just come across the wire. But in fact, it does cost money for us to keep these programs going. Again, the phone number to call is 812-323-1200, 812-323-1200 to support low-barrier, volunteer-powered community journalism here on WFHB's Daily Local News. Please call now or go to WFHB.org and click on the donate button. We'll return now to Doug and Sarah for the rest of the Daily Local News.
Wages for working women continue to lag behind those of males doing the same work. Lynn Duggan, Associate Professor of Labor Studies at Indiana University, was one of four women taking part in a panel discussion titled Pay Equity, Lily Ledbetter's Story and You, at the Bloomington City Hall on Sunday. Duggan says statistics indicate an 18% gap in earnings for the average full-time working woman compared to her male counterpart. In other words, women earn 82 cents for every $1 a man earns.
Over a lifetime of full-time work, you know, given the gender pay gap, the average woman receives $530,000 less than the average man. And this is just full-time workers. And the average college-educated woman receives $800,000 less than the average college-educated man.
Additionally, Duggan says women who care for family members and only work part-time could lose more than $270,000 in wages during their working lifetimes. Women who work part-time also stand to lose around $50,000 in pension income. Quoting the Institute for Women's Policy Research, Duggan says working women in Indiana lag even farther behind working women in most of the rest of the country.
Women in Indiana who work full-time year-round earn 76 cents on the dollar compared with men. This is men earning $1, women earning 76 cents. So way below 82 cents. And if current trends continue, women in Indiana will not see equal pay until the year 2086.
Duggan says the Institute initially thought the reason for this gap was a lack of women in professional and managerial jobs. But more recent research indicates unionization is playing a part. Indiana is one of three states where women make up less than a third of total union membership. Duggan said the Institute found that women represented by unions make $247 more per week than women who aren't.
Union coverage makes a difference because with unions, there's more transparency in criteria and decisions related to compensation, recruitment, and promotions.
Duggan says there are also ethnic disparities. Black women working full-time earn less than white women, and Latinas make less than both black and white women. Duggan notes that a nationwide shift from a manufacturing economy to a service economy has brought down the median hourly wage for men. This has narrowed the gender gap. Duggan says relief for wage disparity needs to come in the form of pay equity laws, equal pay for equal work. Paid family and medical leave and state-subsidized child care would also go a long way toward wage equalization. Indiana State Representative Linda Lawson, a Democrat from Hammond, Indiana, says she's filed six wage discrimination bills over a 12-year period. None of them passed, not even when Democrats controlled the House in a 2007-2008 legislative session.
They don't feel it's necessary. It's not something that is a priority to the people that work in Indianapolis in the General Assembly. The majority of issues that we probably care about are things that they don't care about, and that's just the way it is.
Indianapolis-based labor attorney Quincy Sauer advises women to negotiate their salaries before they're hired, but she also encourages women to stand up for themselves if they feel they are not getting paid the same as their male counterparts for the same work.
I highly recommend going to the EEOC, which is the federal agency, over the state agency. And I hate to say that, but it's really good advice. The state agency mainly enforces what's called the Indiana Civil Rights Act. The Indiana Civil Rights Act does prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex, but its remedies are terrible. And here's why. So we talked about Title VII allows you to get your lost wages, compensatory damages, punitive damages, and your attorney's fees. The state equivalent allows you only to get your lost wages. No compensatory damages, no punitive damages, and the big one is no attorney's fees. So it just makes it difficult to even like have the money to do this type of case. So I recommend the federal protection is significantly stronger than the state protection.
Sauer cautions that labor law is an area where people frequently get bad advice. She recommends contacting the Indiana Bar Association for help in finding a qualified attorney to consult with.
Jobs within the solar industry are growing in Indiana, according to a recent report by the Solar Foundation. Indiana gained more than 1,000 new jobs in the solar industry in 2016, which is a 72% increase since the last survey in 2015. Alex Jarvis, the founder and president of Solar Systems of Indiana, says he's noticed the increase in Monroe County over the 10 years his business has operated here. Jarvis says the price of solar modules decreasing has been a big factor for the market.
We've been in business here for 10 years, and our business has continued to grow every year. So we've definitely seen that trend continue to trend upward, and we've seen that for the last number of years. And probably the last 4 or 5 years, the price of modules really went down pretty dramatically compared to where they were. And then so that just kind of fed the flames for people's interest as the cost continued to trend down. Then the interest then went up, but has continued to stay up. So that's what I've seen.
Solar Systems of Indiana has been an underwriter at WFHB. While Monroe County is not among the top counties with solar jobs in the state, Jarvis says the Bloomington area market has potential for solar energy.
You know, I think Bloomington is a good place for people who are looking forward, more forward-thinking in technology. You know, they want to adopt the latest, greatest technology, and so solar is something that fits right into their interests.
The Bloomington Police Headquarters recently made plans to install solar panels, which the city expects will save almost $9,000 in energy costs every year. But the long-term future of rooftop solar energy in Indiana is uncertain. Senate Bill 309, which has passed the Indiana Senate, would dramatically reduce the financial incentives for residents to install solar panels. That bill currently awaits a vote in the Indiana House of Representatives. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Doug Storm.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
It's Spring Fun Drive at WFHB. When you get the chance to help WFHB maintain its mission of celebrating diversity in South Central Indiana. Let's head back over to Pledge Central with News Director Joe Crawford.
Thank you, Sarah, and thank you, Doug. We have just a few more moments left for folks to call in and support the Daily Local News on this Monday episode. If we got three people to call in and contribute $5 a month, we would make our goal for this show. That would be very big for me. It would make me feel good for sure. I want to thank you already if you have contributed so far in support of WFHB, in support of community radio. Thanks to all of you who've done that this time and over the years as well. I also want to thank, of course, Amrit India Restaurant that we just dropped off some food for our volunteers. Thank you for keeping us fed during this very busy time. That's, again, Amrit India Restaurant. You know, the DLN, which we produce Monday through Thursday, it's a half hour long at 5 o'clock. It's local because WFHB is community owned and we have a local focus. If you're wondering, you know, what was that half hour long newscast that I heard that focused exclusively on local news, that wasn't on any other station. You're not going to find that anywhere else on your radio dial. It's only at WFHB, and that's because of the model that we've used, and that's largely because of our funding model. Covering local news is not always glamorous. It's not always sexy. The Board of Zoning Appeals is not always the most fun meeting to watch or to report on or to read about, but it's important. It affects the lives of us here in Bloomington and in Brown County and Greene County, Owen County, Lawrence County. Those are the things that people we feel an obligation to report on as local news. You know, Doug, WFHB really is, it's as local as it gets. It is really the community reporting on itself.
Well, as you guys were talking earlier, you were talking to Sarah about watching CATS meetings of I guess, very long duration. I thought to myself, it's one of those aspects around here that we have to always ask ourselves, who watches the watchers, right? We need to know who's in charge around here and what they're doing. And a lot of times that kind of thing kind of goes by the wayside if you're a resident of the city. You know, how do you pay attention to what's going on and the council members that deal with trash collection and things of that nature? These are things, as you said, Joe, that may not be of real excitement to listeners, but there can be some very important decisions being made. And it's one of the things that I value WFHB for is finding out what's going on at those meetings. And as you say, not having to attend them myself. So that is one of the things that's important to me about the DLN in particular, and about the you obviously and Sarah as well, having to or wanting to even listen to that and find out what it is that should be reported, what can we report, what needs to be told to our listening audience about what's going on in government.
Indeed. The phone number to call is 812-323-1200. Again, 812-323-1200 to support the Daily Local News. You can also go to wfhb.org. And let's return now to the show for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, my name is Janet Schell, and I volunteer with Teachers Warehouse. I was a longtime teacher in Bloomington. I taught in schools that did not have a lot of support with materials for teachers. There were schools that did have a great PTO and, you know, lots of supplies, but there were a lot of students who didn't have things they needed. Because I taught in many schools that needed more support, I thought about how wonderful this place really is, you know, to help these kids. There's nothing negative about this place, and I think that's so important. You know, the attitude of being a positive place. To me, that's what this place does. I'm constantly putting things on the shelves that have been sorted, and I go through things to make sure they're in the right place. I want it to look beautiful for teachers when they come in, because those things matter. And the fact that I love books, you know, and I've heard that they'll say, wow, it looks so much better. Who did all this? And well, it was me. I think like a teacher, I like things to just be pleasing, you know? It matters to me. I've always liked helping people, even as a little girl. It just made me feel positive and helpful. I've always done that anyway. I interact with the different teachers, and I give them a lot of ideas that I used. And I had some pretty cool ideas. And they love that, you know, hearing from a genuine teacher. There are a lot of things that people can do here as volunteers that will enrich them. And just helping those, especially new teachers who just need a lot of support. And I've been told by more than one teacher that they appreciate so much the support of a friendly face, someone knowledgeable about the stresses that go along with teaching, because teaching is hard. So they love a friendly face and somebody to, you know, give them a hug and say, thank you so much for teaching, because I know how hard it is. Just sharing what I know it has helped teachers, and I know they try those things in their classrooms. So that makes me proud, you know, that there are things I did and thought of that they like. And It's I think of it more as a job, but a wonderful job. Even though you don't get paid, there's so many things about it that make me feel good. That, you know, the fact that, oh my gosh, I've done all this, and it's just a satisfying, enriching experience for me. I love it. It's not anything that I begrudge doing, and I come in way more than what I'm signed up to do. I come every weekend and look around and make things look as beautiful as I can and as accessible as I can. It just matters. I guess not just that I like the books and arranging, but it just matters to me that I'm doing something to help the teachers. You know, just a great place. Thanks for listening. I'm Janet Schell with the Teacher's Warehouse.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three ways to make Bloomington a kind and just city. Volunteers through the Middleway House Legal Program attend hearings and collect data on the court environment. This information helps prepare victims for the time they spend in the courtroom. Or volunteer at the front desk of New Leaf, New Life as one of the first faces an inmate sees after being released. Your smile and guidance to various resources will be a warm beginning to their transition into the community. Or as a volunteer with Justice Unlocked, you can support the special events and fundraising campaigns that provide necessary resources to help their programs run. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jared Dill, Dominic Jean, and Joe Crawford, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services.
Activate is produced by Jennifer Brooks, along with the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Sarah Hetrick. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Doug Storm. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
And you can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Bring It On, our local forum on African American people and culture, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.